back to another edition of Bavarian Podcast Works. This is Chuck Smith. I'm here to bring you the weekend warm-up BFW show where we hit on all of the latest and greatest news of the week. Wow. You want to talk about crazy weeks? I don't know if Bayern Munich has ever had one like this, at least in recent memory. They won the title unexpectedly after a huge collapse by Borussia Dortmund. Then, literally, all hell broke loose. We saw the sacking of two prominent executives, a slew of transfer rumors of players going potentially coming in and others going out. I mean, there is just a lot going on, and this figures to be one of the more active and crazy summers in recent memory for Bayern Munich. So why waste any time? Let's get right down to it. I have to say, I was in the midst of watching Bayern Munich get ahead, then collapse itself, then finally come streaking back. It was really a roller coaster of emotions, because in a lot of ways, as you watched that match, everything about Bayern Munich that has frustrated fans to this point had kind of come to fruition. They looked good on paper. They got out to a decent start, and then just little by little lost that edge. And that is a very concerning trend to me, that with so much on the line, the team could lose its edge like it did. We have seen in recent weeks that the team's mentality has been questioned. And I think it's a little bit fair to look at it that way. And, you know, if you want any bigger of an example of a team with a poor mentality, just look at Dortmund, who had everything in its hands and let it all slip away. But that is a story for another day. Bayern Munich itself really needs to figure some things out. And I think along the way, within winning that title with just a spectacular effort from Jamal Musiala, that late goal that pushed Bayern through, it's amazing to think about where this club was, how this whole season evolved, and then how it got to this point where, I mean, fans were literally exhaling with more relief than I think happiness that the team actually won the league title, which is the baseline these days. If Bayern Munich can't win the league title, we know there's something wrong. But when they come this close to actually losing it, it does sound the alarms. And I think for a lot of reasons that set off the chain of events, just the fact that it got to this point, we saw CEO Oliver Kahn was dismissed. And in fact, things got so contentious as Kahn was being let go that the club could not even let him travel with the team to Köln to watch that final title winning match. It's really a shame. And if I could take a second to talk about Kahn, I'm not so sure that he was fully to blame for everything that happened this season. From a club standpoint, he was the head of the organization and he made the club money. So he did his job in that respect. But what we have seen in recent days are the reports that the club itself, the working environment, had become quite stressed. And anybody who has worked in a corporate job in an office setting, you know when there is a change of culture. When things go from a relaxed, friendly atmosphere to one in which people are uptight, people feel like they're being monitored all the time, people feel like they need to justify their existence, people feel like they're trying to live up to some lofty standard that's being set in a presentation deck, it creates just uneasiness. And I think Kahn made the really fatal mistake of trusting people who were too business-minded to try and apply that corporate culture within a club, a football club, that it just does not work that way. As much as I want to say that you can take corporate principles and make them work in a sporting environment, it typically does not yield you the kind of results that you would want. And it's not to say that the sporting world can't be business-like. It absolutely can. But when you're trying to make Bayern Munich run like a Fortune 500 company and rolling out, frankly, BS strategic visionary plans that have no substance, and you're asking people to justify their existence and think more about the future and where things can go rather than just focusing on their day-to-day jobs, you lose the faith of your working class. And I think that's what happened with Khan. And I don't even necessarily think it was his fault. I think that he was led astray. As you saw when Ole Hoeneß talked about Khan's dismissal, he flat out referenced that Khan had advisors around him pushing him to do certain things. And while I'm speculating, I would guess that a lot of those corporate initiatives and visionary strategies that we saw rolled out when Khan took over were very upsetting to a lot of people who were club employees, people that were really the back office power to make the club run. And if you're feeling uncomfortable and you're not feeling like you like the leadership, you're going to get unmotivated. And while Bayern Munich's bottom line certainly did not get hurt, it clearly created an atmosphere where people weren't as happy. The example was that an employee said that if they saw Karl-Heinz Rummenigge at a bakery across the street from Sabinerstrasse, he would talk to them, say hello, talk to them, and engage them. Whereas if they saw Khan, he would be more likely to kind of blow by them. And that's honestly a big fault for Khan there. That has nothing to do with his advisors. But I think when you come in the way he did and try and bring this corporate culture that you learned about in your Harvard business course, and you try and apply it to a club setting, you were automatically going to upset people. And if you're not the type of person who's bubbly and going to engage people and really make them feel wanted and special, I mean, we're talking about regular employees like most of us are. If you're not going to do that, then you're going to be at risk of alienating people and losing support. And I do think that that was a large part of what happened with Khan, because business-wise, the club was fine. Performance-wise, aside of the timing and the handling of what they did with Julian Nagelsmann, there wasn't much to fault Khan for. They had made some successful transfers. They had made some unsuccessful transfers. But overall, they had done a good job of making money, and they had relatively good success on the pitch. So from a CEO standpoint, letting him go, to me, in my mind, it had more to do with how he was running the organization than the actual results he was getting in the financials and on the pitch. As for Brazo at sporting director, I went through a long exercise of assessing his transfers and trying to figure out why I didn't necessarily find myself to be a fan of him. And what that taught me and what it brought me through was that he did a pretty good job of identifying talent during his time as sporting director. And that really can't be questioned. He made some terrific signings. He maneuvered quite well through the transfer market in terms of attracting players. Where Brazo, I think, failed with some of his transfers was finding players that fit, that would have a role, or that really would have a future with the club. And that really became an ongoing theme with some of the moves that he made. He would get good players, players with talent, but they didn't necessarily have a place to play at Bayern Munich. And whatever was communicated to those players as they entered in the talks and negotiations with the club, there always seemed to be something missing. And Ryan Gravenberch is a good example of that, where he clearly thought he was going to play this season, and anyone that looked at the roster could clearly see he was at best the fourth choice at midfield when the season started. You could argue fifth, because Nagelsmann at that point had shown a propensity to drop Jamal Musiala into the central midfield as well. So there were some issues with Brazo and his handling of transfers, but overall, I'll say it again, I don't think he did a bad job. And I'll be honest, I don't necessarily think either guy, Khan or Brazo, deserved to get fired based on their performance at their respective jobs in terms of running a football club. Just like Khan, however, Brazo had some issues in the past. We all know the Great Flick saga, and we could debate this on and on who was more at fault. But what we clearly do know is that there was an issue that Brazo had in working with Flick. He gave Flick a hard time, and you can leave all of the Flick wanted certain transfers and Brazo wouldn't listen to him and all that at the door. There were issues with how Brazo interacted with Flick, that entire coaching staff, and potentially some of the other executives, because as we saw, one of the conditions for Karl-Heinz Rummenigge to come back to Sabinerstrasse was for Brazo to be kicked out the door. So there were clearly a lot of bad feelings built up within that front office, within the executive suites, about things that happened in the past. And a lot of people like to look at human nature and say, you want people to move on and forgive and move past things. But these are high-powered, big-egoed individuals. They do not forget. And Karl-Heinz Rummenigge clearly, after the Brazo Flick saga, had enough. And there were things that he saw that he didn't like. There were things that played out in ways that Rummenigge obviously did not like. And he didn't want any part of that into the club that he was coming back to. So in my mind, when I saw that story, it really was a situation where Karl-Heinz Rummenigge looked at the room and said, if I'm coming back, I don't want any of the existing issues to remain. I don't want the potential for alliances. I don't want any of the ill will that had previously been built up to be present. And Uli Hoeneß, who is a stark and stringent Brazo backer, had to cede that, and they let Brazo go. So this all happened for a reason. The club right now is very unstable, at least at this juncture. But what we do know is that Hoeneß and Rummenigge will put the club back in a good position. Now, what that means and how they do it, we don't know yet. But we know that they will create the sense that there is a strong foundation and that there is stability within the organization. We just don't know how long that's going to take. And it's in such a weird way, and I don't want to harp on it too much, you have to wonder about how things would have played out differently had one, well, as Phil Quinn always likes to bring up, had Manuel Neuer not went skiing this winter, the whole thing changes. I mean, every dynamic completely changes, and Brazo and Kahn both probably still have jobs. But the decision to fire Nagelsmann when they did, how they handled it, how the word leaked out, how Nagelsmann's agent found out from the media, it was just a cluster F of epic proportions. It showed that Brazo and Kahn did not know how to handle something like that. And not only was firing him at that juncture a huge mistake in terms of upsetting the team and really creating a lot of confusion, it showed that Brazo and Kahn might not have this master visionary plan after all. When they went out and got Nagelsmann, they paid a hell of a lot of money, I think upwards of 25 million euro. To then turn around a year and a half later and fire Nagelsmann after you invested all of that money, and then you were on the hook for his big salary for the next couple of years, it showed that there is really no plan, that these guys are reactionary, that they're talking a big game, but they didn't have the fortitude to stick it out. And when Nagelsmann showed the slightest crack that things might not work out with him, Brazo and Kahn bailed. They went out and they used the excuse of being afraid that Thomas Tuchel was going to sign a deal with Juventus. Who cares if Thomas Tuchel signed a deal with Juventus? Because now we know what Thomas Tuchel is all about too. He's a good coach. Can he take Bayern Munich to the next level? It really remains doubtful at this point because we did not see the players respond to him like you would hope. They got bounced from the Pokal. They got bounced from the Champions League, and they nearly coughed up the Bundesliga. So anybody looking for a reason to think that Tuchel is the answer, then he's going to do things that Nagelsmann could not do, I think you're misguided. And I say that respectfully because I do value everybody's opinion on the topic. But that one move, sacking Nagelsmann, and then the complete bumbling of it, it really did cost Kahn and Brazo their jobs because of all the other faults that they had. They were being overlooked because there was a plan and Bayern Munich was working towards something. But when Nagelsmann got canned, that plan went out the window. It showed that this is a reactionary tandem of people making footballing decisions and that there was no strategic direction. And that's how we got to the point of where we're at, where fans were just relieved to have won the Bundesliga title. Now, aside of all of that, the executive overhauls, we saw just a crazy amount of transfer stories this week. And in some ways, it's good. There are some of these moves I think are going to help the club. There are others that were pretty much came out of nowhere that could potentially be debilitating toward the club. So we're going to take a short break. at this point, but we're going to address all of those rumors coming back. There is a ton going on with those. And I think some will make fans happy. Some probably not. But let's hit that as soon as we get back from this commercial break. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining the Weekend Warm-Up Podcast. This is Chuck Smith, and we are hitting on the transfer portion of this show. In the first segment, we hit on the title-winning performance by Bayern Munich and the executive sacking that went on. All of that craziness, it was complete insanity. Trying to follow our site the last few days has been nuts. We've been staying on top of everything and how these stories have all evolved. It's just been one surprise after another. But some good news did emerge, and it does seem like Bayern Munich has a plan for how to move forward. Can they execute the plan? Well, that's the big question. Two of the more prominent names that we saw the club linked to this week were Juventus striker Dusan Vlahovic and West Ham defensive midfielder Declan Rice. And we'll start with Vlahovic because the number nine, in my mind, is a glaring weakness on this team. It is the number one position that needs to be filled this summer. But Vlahovic was not exactly the player who was atop the club's wish list just a few weeks ago. Now, if you want to rewind about a week and a half ago, we saw Fabrizio Romano issued a report saying that Bayern Munich had interest in Vlahovic, and I believe he linked Chelsea and Manchester United to Vlahovic as well. The problem with that report was it really brought out the German media to say, nope, you're wrong, Fabrizio, you don't have it right. Bayern Munich has no interest in Dusan Vlahovic. Now, this all happened before the executive shakeup and all of that, but what we did learn is that after Kahn and Brazo were let go, Tuchel's voice became a lot louder. And we know that even going back to the initial report, Tuchel probably fed Fabrizio Romano some of that information because he clearly was pushing for Vlahovic. Now we know that Tuchel is really going all out to convince Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge to go out and get the Juventus striker, who really could be an excellent case of someone that just needs a change of scenery to get going. He did not have a great season for Juventus. But just like we saw with Matthijs de Ligt, moving from Juventus to Bayern Munich could really open the door for the Serb to really realize his potential. And Vlahovic, I think, is a good player around the net. He's got that big body that Bayern likes to have at the nine position. He's got good touch in front of goal. And I think if he can work on his movement within the box, if he can get himself into maybe a little bit better physical condition, I think he's going to have really an explosive season if he joins Bayern Munich. Now, there is competition for Vlahovic, and there's no sure thing that Bayern is going to get him. But what we do know is Tuchel wants him. We know that Uli Hoeneß has been labeled to be a fan of Randall Kolo Muani. So there could be a little bit of conflict there. But at this point, I don't know how much Rummenigge and Hoeneß are going to be able to fight this Vlahovic thing just because Vlahovic is a cheaper option than Kolo Muani. Eintracht has shown really no desire to let Kolo Muani go, especially for under nine figures. Vlahovic, while they're listing him as available for 80 million, Juventus needs the money. You might be able to get him for 50 or 60 million plus bonuses. I'm estimating at that, but I think that's the kind of deal you could see get done. And if you can do that, I think you take the chance on him. I think you have to. I think you're out of options. As we saw this week, Harry Kane has come out and determined that he does not want to move to Bayern Munich, at least per reports. So if he doesn't want that move to Bayern, and believe me, if you would offer me Kane, I would take him in a second because he is that good. I never once believed it was reality because I don't think Kane wants to leave England. And I would take Kane and he would be my number nine the next 3 to 4 years. And he would score a ton of goals and you would be a Champions League contender. None of that is debatable. I just don't think that he wants to leave England. So when you factor that in and you see that Victor Osimhen is literally has a price tag of 150 million euro on his head, I mean, you're down to Vlahovic and Kolo Muani at this point. And I just prefer Vlahovic. It's a smaller fee. I think there's a bigger upside, to be honest with you. And it's not a knock on Kolo Muani, but I do think we might have seen the best that he can be at this point. I don't know that we've seen that from Vlahovic, because I don't think Juventus is quite the environment that's going to coax the best out of someone, at least these days. So for Vlahovic, I think it would be a smart, wise move for Bayern to get him. And I hope that they pursue that avenue. And I hope that they actually listen to Tuchel on this. I'm not going to say I'm backing every move Tuchel wants, but this one I think would be a winner. As for Declan Rice, it gets very interesting here, because I kind of put Rice in that same category as Harry Kane in terms of being an Englishman who I don't believe will ever want to leave England. But Rice is, he's an excellent player. And Bayern has started to lay the groundwork of convincing him to make this move. We've seen that Tuchel has talked to him on the phone. We've seen that before he was sacked, Brazo, Marco Nepp, at least those two went to visit Rice in England. We saw another report that stated Tuchel was part of that party as well. I don't know what's true and what's not, but what we do know is that at least three members of Bayern Munich have spoken to Declan Rice and tried to convince him that this is the way, as the Mandalorian would say. And I don't know if Rice is going to be fully receptive to that. I don't know if he's just using Bayern Munich to really leverage up the kind of money that he can make from Arsenal or whoever else ultimately signs him. What I do know is he's going through these talks. I know that he's at least entertaining the idea, and it's got Bayern Munich fans excited. Admittedly, I haven't watched a ton of Rice. What I'm going by is the few games I've seen, which our old guy Jake is a West Ham fan, so occasionally I will check them out if I see them as I'm flipping by. But it is kind of funny that it has kind of, it's excited the Bayern Munich fan base, because the people that do watch him regularly, they have a strong affinity for his game and think that he is the perfect, as Thomas Tuchel described it, player to come in and play the six at Bayern Munich. I don't know if that's the case. I'm going to go by what a lot of people are telling me and say that he probably can come in and be that type of player. The reality of the situation is Bayern Munich's going to have to convince a young Englishman to move to Germany during the prime years of his career. And that's tough. That is a very tough gig, because not only can he be paid more in England, which undoubtedly those richer clubs will be able to do that, but for a lot of English players, I feel like if they move away from the Premier League, they're off the radar, and that's how they perceive it. So even though the Bundesliga, in my mind, is an extremely quality league, Rice would be out of sight, out of mind to many of his countrymen who might want to follow him. So I'm not as confident in the Rice deal getting done as I am Vlahovic, but I do think that both players present good options for Bayern Munich. Of course, the fallout that would happen with Rice is that Leon Goretzka would most likely leave the club. Now, we did see some stories this week that Goretzka potentially would want to stay, even if they bring in Rice, even if Laimer ultimately signs, and even if Gravenberch stays. But we also have the new specter of Marcel Sabitzer, who was on loan at Manchester United for the second half of the season, is coming back to the club. We don't know if he'll stay, but Manchester United is not going to sign him. So Sabitzer, for all intents and purposes, is back on the Bayern Munich roster until they can find a buyer for him. What that shows us is this club has a hell of a lot of options in the central midfield, and most of them are eights. I still have this belief that Joshua Kimmich can be a great number six, in that he can be one of the world's best if he embraces the position. And I think that his partnership with Goretzka can really work if Kimmich embraces being the six. But right now, Kimmich has not done that. Kimmich's game has sort of evolved to the point where he has become a number eight, and that he has not taken that strong attention toward his defensive responsibilities and sat in that deeper role when required. So I think that his upcoming move to the number eight position is partly on him, because he has not embraced being the number six that he so badly wanted to be just a few years ago. So his thought process, whether he would admit that or not, has changed, and it could push his good buddy Goretzka right out of the club. Goretzka, of course, is rumored to have some interest from Liverpool. I'll have a hard time believing that Goretzka is going to want to stay if they bring in Declan Rice. I think he's just talking nice at this point. I think if something happened and Bayern brought in Rice or another quality defensive midfielder and Kimmich was going to push up, unless Thomas Tuchel's telling everyone they're running a 4-3-3, I think Goretzka would want out. I think Gravenberch will want out. Sabitzer obviously probably already wants out. Leimer's coming into a complete mess in the central midfield, so good luck to him with that. But as for Rice, whatever happens with him will have a dramatic fallout on the rest of the roster, particularly with those players who are in the central midfield now. It will not be easy on any of them, I assure you, if Rice comes in, because then you are looking at Rice and Kimmich, two players who likely will almost never come off the field. So I don't know how you would be able to retain players like Goretzka or Gravenberch or even Leimer past 1 year if you're not offering them any real possibility of playing time. Perhaps more interesting than the players that are potentially coming in, though, are those players that could be going out. We talked a little bit about Goretzka and we talked about Sabitzer's situation, but we got news this week that one, Benjamin Pavard has told the club that he's outro. He does not want to play for Bayern Munich next season. We also saw reports saying that he could end up sticking around for the final year of his contract and leaving on a free transfer because he really might not get what he wants money-wise because of the transfer fee that Bayern Munich is going to demand for him. So if Bayern wants a bigger transfer fee, it could have an adverse effect on the salary that Pavard is offered. So this whole thing might play out. I think if Bayern plays hardball like that, it would be a pretty silly move. Why pass up 30 to 40 million you can get for Pavard? It's just to be a hard ass. I don't understand that at all. If you can get that much for a guy that doesn't want to play for you anymore, I think you have to do it. I like Pavard. I wish he would stay. I've been championing him for years now. I've been one of the few, the proud, that have stuck by that guy's side because I think he is a good player. I think his versatility to be able to play center back and right back, it makes him so much more valuable on a roster. And I think he's performed really well. I honestly have him rated as the second best player on the back line this season for Bayern Munich. I thought he was far better than Upamecano this season. He's a player that I would love to have back on the roster, but if he wants to leave, he's going to have his options because we've seen a slew of clubs interested in him from AC Milan, Inter Milan, Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester City, Real Madrid, FC Barcelona. I mean, we don't know how legitimate all of those rumors are, or even any of those rumors, but we do know that he is drumming up some interest. And I think Benjamin Pavard is going to find himself in a good spot wherever he lands, and he's going to play center back on a full-time basis, which is something that he really wants to do. And listen, he's had a good run at Bayern Munich. He was part of that sextuple winning team. And I think he was a player that got far too much criticism. He became the whipping boy for a lot of the troubles that were going on at the team when they had their down periods. In reality, he was nothing less than a very solid player at all times. And he gave his coaches options and flexibility, which is really invaluable in today's game. Perhaps even more shocking than Pavard's request to transfer out was Lucas Hernandez basically greasing his skids out the door because Kicker reported that Hernandez has told Bayern Munich that he wants to leave and is going to take the deal from PSG. Again, this is a very touchy situation for Bayern Munich because I don't think they anticipated this happening at all. I think this blindsided them. I think this now truly does have an adverse effect on all of their squad planning because now you just have De Ligt and Upamecano as your center backs. Now you need to go out into the transfer market and get a third starting caliber center back to really complete your back line. Hernandez, for all the great things he does, and he is such a good player when healthy, he does have just a laundry list of injuries. And you have to think that this is all going to catch up to him at some point, that there is no way that physically he's going to be able to, one, stay healthy, but two, have a long career given all of the damage that he's been accumulating. And I really do like Hernandez's game. I do. I think he is a fantastic defender. I think despite not being the tallest player, he handles playing center back so well because he's has that speed and that burst and that aggressiveness that the coaches just love to see, that it makes up for not being a 6'3", 6'4", hulking figure on the back line. The problem is, and I've said this before, we don't know if that burst is going to be there after this latest knee injury. Even if it is, how long will it stay? It's not like he's getting any younger. He's had a great career so far. He was very, very good at Bayern Munich. Was he worth the $80 million that they paid for him? You could debate that. I would say probably. Probably he was. Will they get $80 million for him now? No. I think that if they have to sell him, you're probably looking at $50 to $60 million. And part of that is because of his injury history and the fact he's coming off a major ACL injury. So for Hernandez, this is a situation where I think Bayern's going to fight like hell to keep him. I just think he, at this point, if you want to believe the reports are out there, he's made up his mind to leave. And Bayern, to their fault probably, did not anticipate this happening. So now you're in a situation where you've got Pavar with one foot out the door and you've got Hernandez following him. And now you do have a gap. You do have a spot on the roster that needs to be filled, and you're going to need to spend money for that. And you're going to need to convince someone who's coming in that they will get enough playing time in the mix with De Ligt and Upamecano to really be happy. So this is not going to make whoever takes over at sporting director, it's not going to make their job easy. And even if Bayern does not hire a sporting director, the supervisory board is going to have its work cut out for it, trying to fix this mess on the back line, something they probably did not anticipate happening. And if you want to throw even more fuel onto the fire, Alphonso Davies now is not going to negotiate with Bayern Munich on a contract extension this summer. His agent said that he's going to wait another year before that happens. And let me tell you, that is yet another thing that Bayern Munich did not anticipate happening. And for Davies, it seems to be more of a question about stability. And stability is kind of the key word for today's show, if you haven't noticed. Davies, through all the reports that we have read about him, he has wanted a stable environment through the 2026 World Cup. Now, there was no guarantee that Davies was going to stay at Bayern Munich past the 2026 World Cup. And in fact, it seemed like he was almost eyeing that up as a situation where he wanted to be in one spot until then and then really start to go out and explore his career. But that all might be speeding up for the 22-year-old who specializes in speed. You like that? I'm trying to amuse myself here. But anyway, Davies' contract expires in 2025. So I don't think this is a situation where Bayern Munich wants to allow this to get to next summer. You don't want to be in a position where you're either looking at selling him for less than market value, which would probably be the case if you got to next summer with him, or you're risking letting him play the year and leave on a free transfer. And I'm of the mindset that Davies was kind of teetering on the edge of Bayern Munich, right? Like, I think he likes the club. I think that he respects that they brought him in and took a chance on him. And I think that he had a good relationship with Brazo, who was, by all accounts, very instrumental in going out and bringing Davies to Germany. The problem is Brazo is now out of the equation. So now Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge are going to have to try and convince Davies that there is stability, that they do have a plan for him, and that he should re-up with the club. I don't know if it's going to happen. This year delay on talks, it could just be posturing by his agent, but it also could show that he wants to ignore the situation until next summer, when basically Bayern would have to sell him. If there was no guarantee he was going to re-up his deal next summer, then Bayern would have to sell him, and there's nothing they could do about that. You cannot risk a talent like Davies losing him for free. It would be completely unacceptable. So at that point, if Bayern and Davies get to next summer and they get to the negotiating table and Davies' agent says he wants to move on, Bayern will have lost all of their negotiating ability, because we all know how word will spread about that. So this is very interesting, and I'm very curious to see how Rummenigge and Hoeneß handle this. Now, I don't think, and I don't want to suggest that they're going to sell Davies this summer, despite interest from Manchester City and Real Madrid. But I will say that they're going to have to start to explore what's next for Davies. Do they have confidence that they can get him signed next summer? If not, are they confident they can even get close to market value for him? And are they really willing to go into his final season hoping like hell that at some point he has a change of heart and wants to stay with the club? I don't know what's going to happen with Davies. It's a very discouraging situation overall because he's got a massive fan base, with not just Bayern fans, but everywhere. People love Davies. I mean, I think some of the people haven't watched him play in 2 years because he has not been that good, but they love him anyway. And in my mind, I would like to keep Davies because I think the potential that he has could make him a very, very good player. Will he ever really achieve greatness? I don't know that he has the mindset to do that. Like he might like soccer, but he loves being a celebrity. And you could say that about a lot of players. I mean, Holger Badstuber might have been a player you most think about with that. Like, he was such a good talent, suffered some really traumatic injuries, but he liked his nightlife. He liked being a celebrity and living that lifestyle. And I kind of get the same vibes from Davies in that, you know, that's what he likes to do. And I don't think it's prevented him from being a great footballer to this point, but over the course of time, it certainly could. I don't think he's anywhere near playing the best that he could at this point. I think he's taken some steps back. His game has gotten, frankly, a little bit stale. And I don't know if that means he needs a change of scenery. I don't think, you know, that necessarily he does, but how much is he bought into the project here? How much does he want to be here? Not just now, but in 2 or 3 years. And I think that's something he's thinking about. And this whole move with Brazo, I think, bought his agent a little bit of time to explore those options. So this is definitely one of the more fascinating periods at Bayern Munich. There's a lot that could happen. This summer is going to be insane. You know, we just talked about a handful of transfers here. That doesn't even address some of the other moves that might need to happen. And of course, we have the whole uncertainty surrounding who will take over the sporting director role and just how long Thomas Tuchel will last as manager, because, you know, I always feel like the clock is ticking on him, given how his relationships typically explode after a certain period of time. So will that time bomb go off for Tuchel next season? Will it be the season after? I don't know. I know a lot of people are speculating he might not survive October. And honestly, I could see that. But I do think he'll get through next season. What happens from there, I don't know. But this is a very tumultuous time. And if you're a Bayern Munich fan, it's going to be wild to follow this from day to day. And it will probably be a little bit exhausting to follow it all. But just know that Bavarian Football Works will be there to help you do that and will be a good sounding board for any thoughts that you have. And we'll, of course, be covering it all. As for the entertainment portion of this program, I typically hit on things that I've been watching. But as you know, I have not been able to really dive into anything. I've been watching a lot of sports at night. I did want to touch very briefly on Succession. I tried to watch the show in the first season, and quite frankly, it bored me and I bailed out. I didn't like any of the characters. It wasn't that I didn't find the storyline interesting, but I found everyone on the show eminently unlikable. Now, I have tried to watch an episode here or there. No, this totally goes out of my realm here because I typically love watching something from start to finish so I can assess everything as a whole. I can say that in the few episodes that I have watched, I will tell you that the acting was outstanding. Knowing how it all ends up, I think the storyline eventually got to where it should be. I didn't have the knowledge to know all the finer details and the character points and character development points that went on. So I didn't have that. But what I will tell you is Succession is one of those things, one of those phenomenons that made HBO what it was. And even though I wasn't necessarily a fan, it did bring in people to want to make appointment TV. It made people want to watch. HBO, for its part, has not been able to really capture audiences with its shows as much as it used to. when we went through that great run of, say, The Sopranos, The Wire, Game of Thrones, you know, we had even lesser known shows like Deadwood and Carnival and, you know, Eastbound and Down, which was spectacular. There were so many good shows in HBO's prime. They have not been able to recapture that magic. And when I flip through HBO, you know, I see garbage. I see a bunch of shows that aren't funny, that I don't know what the point is. And I know people are always telling me I should watch Barry, but I tried that and didn't like that either, which is weird. Like, I thought I would like that show, could not get into it. So I don't know if it's my tastes are changing as I get older, or maybe I'm just harder to please that way, but I'm very disappointed in how HBO has devolved. And I would like to see something break from them that's good. I mean, I'm one of these idiots that pays for HBO, even though now I'm really not watching anything on it. And at some point, I'll probably take a step back and say, do I really need this channel? Do I need to pay extra for HBO because I'm barely watching it? But I do. It does make me think that of the good old days when Sunday night you could count on there being a really good show on. I don't think we're at that stage with HBO. I think, you know, in its day, man, they did so many great things, and not the least of which was Band of Brothers, which I went on a, you know, really a pitch for last weekend in the weekend warm-up column, where I was kind of imploring people to watch it because it's so good. But, you know, HBO is not the same to me. It has not looked the same or feel the same or felt the same, I should say, in such a long time. I would love for it to get its great writing and great shows back, but I can barely watch any of its original series anymore. I think most of them are pretty terrible. So I won't say Succession's terrible. I totally get the hype around it. It just wasn't for me. I guess same for Barry, but hey, if you have thoughts on what you how you felt about that Succession finale, drop them in the comments, because I'd like to know if from the people that went through that whole journey, did it pay off for you? I'm always interested to see what people think after you watch a show for so many years. I'm always interested to see what the feelings are after finale, and if people ultimately felt like it was worth it. If you know anything about me, there are certain shows that I feel like the finales were botched, and The Sopranos included, Game of Thrones most notably, because it was such a fantastic story along the way that the way they ended it the last season and a half was absolutely terrible. There was so many different ways that could have been better, not the least of which was we got robbed of watching the Night King and Jon Snow face off in a real fight. Instead, that got neutered out, which was a big miss in my mind. But either way, HBO, not the same as it was, but if you like the Succession finale and you like that whole journey, let me know, because maybe at one point you can convince me to go back and check out the whole thing. That'll about wrap it up for this week's edition of the Weekend Warm-Up Podcast. As always, you can get me at the Barrel Blog on Twitter. You can get the site at Bavarian FB Works. You can get our Tweetmeister, Tom Adams, at TommyAdams71. You can get I Need No Name at BFWINNN. You can get all of our talented and wonderful podcasters and writers at BavarianFootballWorks.com. Stay with us over the course of the summer. We're not going anywhere. We'll be covering all the news, all the latest transfer rumors, all the wheelings and dealings of the club. It's going to be wild, so buckle up. Have a couple of beers on me this weekend, and we will see you next time.